I enjoy a nice glass of wine, but I don't pretend to be an expert in wine. I usually just want a wine that's high quality, delicious, and not too expensive. And to me, that's Bogle Family Vineyards. And here's the thing about Bogle. This is a third generation family-owned winery from California that makes exceptional wines for about 10 bucks a bottle. Bogle wines consistently earn Best Buy designations and high ratings from wine enthusiasts. And let me tell you something. The folks at Wine Enthusiast, they drink a lot of wine. They drink a lot of fancy, expensive wine. And yet they still keep giving great ratings to Bogle. And Bogle Vineyards has so many different kinds of wine. Whatever your mood, whatever you're eating, there's a wine for you. They got this great Pinot Grigio that's crisp and fruity, goes well with spicy foods, with fish. They have a classic Chardonnay that's balanced, amazing with a pork tenderloin or butter chicken. I like to take that Chardonnay and do what Jacques Pepin taught me, a couple of ice cubes in your glass of Bogle. If Jacques Pepin says it's okay, then it's okay. And there's the Bogle Pinot Noir, refined and elegant with bright fruit and about as food-friendly as a red wine can be. You're not going to believe it's only $10. Neither will your friends if you tell them. So pick up a few bottles of Bogle wherever you buy your favorite wines. Please drink responsibly. This episode contains explicit language and adult subject matter, and some of it starts right here at the very beginning. So I'm just going to pause, okay? If you're a parent in the car, you got kids in the back seat, maybe this came on autoplay, now you're fumbling, don't get in an accident. It's okay. I'm giving you a second. This one's probably not family friendly. Sorry, kids, okay? This one's for grown-ups. All right? Everyone okay? You got it? All right. Here we go. I recently went out to Red Lobster, which I know is one of your faves.
I fucking love Red Lobster! Red Lobster and Chili's and Applebee's are my favorite chain restaurants.
This is comedian Nicole Byer. She hosts the absurd cooking competition show Nailed It. And she is passionate about her chain restaurants. As I understand it, you've gone through a tough time with some of these chains, though, Nicole, and I really feel for you because you love the Cajun chicken linguine at Red Lobster, right? But they changed the recipe on you.
They did. There's something off about it now, and I can't put my little fingy on it.
And then you were a big fan of the chicken Caesar pita at Chili's, I read.
Yes.
And they took that off the menu.
And they got rid of it.
What was so special about that?
I guess I just like salad wraps. I like salad that I can hold. So... And the dressing was good. So it's like you could pretend that you're eating healthy and you're definitely not.
Right, right.
And then Applebee's got rid of their apple chimney cheesecake. And I'm really hoping if I talk about it enough, they'll bring it back.
There's a lot of things.
Have you ever had it?
I have not, but I've heard tell of it. Describe it for people who don't know it.
Okay. An apple chimney cheesecake from Applebee's is cheesecake put in like a sugared tortilla, and then it's deep fried to perfection, and then they put it on a plate, and then they put a scoop of vanilla ice cream on it. I'm like beaming talking about this. Like, this is the fattest I've ever felt, where I'm like literally squealing about this dessert. But it's so good. It's like light, flaky. The cheesecake is like just warm enough that it's gooey. It's so good.
Do you need a minute here, Nicole? It sounds like you're getting a little emotional.
Imagine I just started crying. And I was like, I just want the apple chimney cheesecake.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. As I said, Nicole Byer hosts Nailed It. It's a cooking competition show where the contestants basically have no idea how to cook. They're clueless. And the show is hilarious and a huge hit for Netflix. In 2020, Nicole was nominated for an Emmy in the Outstanding Host category, the first Black woman to be nominated in that category. She and I will talk about Nailed It later on. But Nicole's early career, doing stand-up and acting, it was very different from her role on Nailed It, which is a kid-friendly show. Like, my kids and I, we love to watch it together. But in Nicole's other work, she's long been known for being raunchy and honest.
I take my burger, I'm walking to leave JFK, and I was like, oh, I gotta pee. So I go to the bathroom, I start peeing. Let's get real, I'm taking a shit. Planes are tight, can't shit on a plane. So I'm taking a shit and I smell my burger and I'm like, ooh, it smells so good. So I start eating the burger while I'm taking a shit.
On the MTV show Girl Code, Nicole got her first bikini wax on camera.
I'm gonna do your butt. Oh, no.
You have to put a little powder before.
Oh, yeah, get the powder in there. Oh, ow, my butt!
When she was with the sketch comedy group Upright Citizens Brigade, she did this classic sketch where she goes for an acting audition and the casting director keeps telling her to act blacker.
Ooh, child, I got them clams. I got everything on that list you gave me.
Blacker.
Clams make the party. Ha ha!
Spike Lee.
Ooh, the clams. Ooh, yeah.
Nicole joined me from L.A. When we first started talking, I told her that I especially loved her show Loosely Exactly Nicole. It ran for 2 seasons a few years back, first on MTV, then on Facebook. It's a comedy based on her life. There's this one episode called Dead Mom Chicken Day. Nicole's mom passed away when Nicole was in high school. That is true. That really happened. But it also factors into the episode's storyline when Nicole tries to go out for fried chicken and her go-to spot's closed.
No, 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 no. This can't be right. Oh, God, look, my mom died when I was 16, and I come here every year on her birthday because their chicken tastes just like hers. And it's closed, and now I don't know where to go.
Do you actually commemorate your mom's birthday in some way?
I haven't done it in a while. I used to make a funfetti cake with rainbow chip icing for my mom's birthday, like just to make her a birthday cake. And they were like, is that your mom's favorite cake? And I was like, no, it's my favorite cake because I'm the one who's going to eat it. A dead lady can't eat. So I used to do that. And then I used to make a dead mom Mother's Day cake. And then, I don't know, I like moved out to L.A. and I kind of, no, I did it when I was in L.A. I don't know when I stopped doing it, maybe like 2 years ago.
But did doing that on your mom's birthday or on Mother's Day make you feel better?
No, of course not. My mom's dead. Cake's not going to make you feel better. Uh-oh, did I...
No, you're...
I was like, I broke you.
No. But in that episode of Dead Mom Chicken Day, you said that you were going to this specific chicken restaurant because they were the restaurant that made chicken most like your mom's.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a place like that in real life?
No, nobody makes food like my mom. It's kind of hard. Like, nobody in my family even makes food the way she did. She was this, like, loud woman who just, like, if she met you for the first time, would, like, give you the biggest hug, and she made you feel like she knew you your whole life. And I think she just made food with love. The only time I make good macaroni and cheese is if I'm, like, excited to make it. And I can make very good mac and cheese, but if I'm like, ugh, I gotta make this mac and cheese, it won't be good. And I think it's because I'm not making it with love.
Do you have specific memories of cooking with your mom?
Yeah, we would make pancakes together until we, like, could do it ourselves. And then she'd be like, you do it. But I learned that I love a deep-fried pancake. You put a little too much oil in the pan, tilt the pan, submerge the pancake in there, and you fucking deep-fry that bitch. And it's so fucking good. What else? We would make... My mom... Oh, I can't find the recipe anywhere that seems close to it, but my mom would make these cream cheese sugar cookies, and
wow,
they were so fucking good. Ugh, I loved them. And we would like roll them into shapes and shit, and then they would expand in the oven and you wouldn't know what you made. But we always tee-hee-heed and chuckled about it.
What's the dish that's missing from your family, your big family table, because your mom isn't there?
I don't know. It's like everything's missing because my mom, like, I don't know any other family who used to do like a big old Easter dinner, but she loved having a big Easter dinner where she would make everything and then serve it to everybody. Like, she would just be in the kitchen all day, and that's just like a nice memory.
What do you do on Easter now?
Nothing. My aunt did once try to send me an Easter dinner through the mail.
Just like in an envelope?
No, in a box. I was like living in New York, and I hadn't been to Chicago to visit my family in a while because I was pretty fucking poor. And she was like, I'm going to do something nice for you. I'm going to send you a little something for Easter. And I was like, okay, cool. So I get this like pink slip in the mail, and I was like, oh, I'll get it tomorrow. And then the weekend happened, and then it was like Monday. And I was like, oh, I think I got to go get it. So I go to the post office on like 125th. And I give them the slip, and this lady behind the counter, she's like, oh my gosh, she's here. She's here. Brenda, she's here. And I was like, oh my God, why are she and Brenda so excited? And then they were like, it's her. And then like other people came out of the back. And I didn't know what was happening. And then they were like, here's your box. And it was dripping wet.
Oh no.
And it stunk. And I was like, oh my God, what is in here? And they all watched me open it. And my aunt had sent me some cooked things, some raw things. Like there was just a raw bag of bacon. Then there was like cornbread mix. And then I think slices of ham in a Ziploc bag, macaroni and cheese in a Ziploc bag. And it had been sitting on a truck because she didn't overnight it. And then it sat at the post office for days. And then my aunt had called me, and I finally called her back, and she was like, did you get your dinner? And I was like, I did. She's like, did you eat it? And I didn't have the heart to tell her, no, no, auntie, it is rotten. But it was very fun. I don't think I've ever had someone, except for teens, laugh at me as hard as those two women laughed at me.
Nicole's aunt sent her that care package because she thought Nicole needed a taste of home on Easter, especially since Nicole's mom isn't around anymore. But the gesture didn't exactly pan out. Fortunately, some of the other foods Nicole grew up with are easier to replicate.
My mom used to make these ravioli things, not from scratch, just out of a bag, and they were really good. And I can't remember what brand it is, but I know they're from Costco. Have you ever been to Costco?
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. Although it has less, I get less joy from it since when I married my wife, Janie, which overall has been a net positive in my life. But it, as part of the deal, I agreed to stop cooking pork in our house because she grew up kosher. And one of my favorite things to get at Costco used to be the pork chops. So now it's lost a bit of its luster for me.
Wait, why is pork not... Is it because pigs are dirty? They like roll around in the dirt?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, the scholars probably disagree. But basically, yes, pork and shellfish cannot ever be kosher.
What about shrimp? Shrimp doesn't really have, like, it's not shellfish.
It technically is. If you buy it before it's been shelled, then it's shellfish.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, shrimps come in a shell?
Yes, yes, their whole body is encased in a shell.
Yeah. Whoa! No way!
It's not a hard shell like a clam or an oyster. Google a picture right now of a whole shrimp.
Okay, whole ass shrimp.
It's got little tiny black eyes. You can eat the head.
Wait, shrimps have eyes? I've never seen a shrimp, I guess. Wait, images? That's what a shrimp looks like? Ew. I don't know if I can eat shrimp anymore. Who thought to get into that? Who caught these nasty little nuggets and was like, there must be meat inside?
Yep, that's a shrimp, Nicole. And you see how it's got a shell on the outside?
Yeah, I guess it is a shell.
Not kosher.
Not kosher. Lobster, that's definitely a shellfish.
That's right, yeah. Have you seen a whole lobster before?
I've seen the Little Mermaid.
Okay,
come on,
right,
now.
Sorry, yes, yes.
Wait, is Sebastian a lobster or a crab?
I'm pretty sure a lobster, but now we need to check that too.
Okay, I gotta Google that. Okay, Sebastian... Oh, so yeah, Sebastian's a fucking crab.
If that's a crab, you know, then Disney people need to reevaluate because that looks like a lobster to me. Those claws...
It does look like a lobster.
Crabs are like wide and squat and they move sideways.
He does move sideways.
Does he?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a dead giveaway. He's a crab. Wikipedia's right.
I'm glad we got to the root of that.
We made a lot of progress here, Nicole.
The Little Mermaid is a flawless movie because... I think at the heart of it is, the story is a young woman who wants to look like everybody else and then a fat sea witch said having a voice is more important than looking like everybody else. And then that wise fat woman dies. And then this little redheaded person goes to where the people are with legs and then marries a man that she has literally never spoken to. I think it's got a great message for little girls everywhere.
Thank you.
weed is always greener in somebody else's lake. You dream about going up there, but that is a big mistake. Just look at the world around ya, right there on the ocean floor. Such wonderful things around ya, what more is ya looking for? Under the sea, under the sea.
Coming up, Nicole and I talk all about Nailed It. Part of the magic of the show is the chemistry she has with her co-host, the famous French chocolatier Jacques Torres.
I remember like the first time I said something dirty, he was like, Nicole! He's like, why you say that? I was like, I don't know, I'm a freak. And he's like, you're not a freak, you're dirty.
So what not safe for work chocolate sculptures does Nicole love to make for Jacques? We'll find out. Plus, she explains why she never eats sandwiches at home. Stick around.
Yes, you gon' be on the plate. Oh. Under the sea.
Under the sea.
Under the sea.
Under the sea.
Nobody beat us. Fry us and eat us. In fricassee.
Under the sea.
We were the land folk love to cook.
And now, a delicious word from our sponsors.
Norwegian Cruise Line breaks the boundaries of global cruise travel. When you cruise with NCL, you're going to get award-winning specialty restaurants, a variety of food and beverage offerings, immersive entertainment, and the most thrilling experiences at sea. It is first class. These ships have all kinds of specialty restaurants: Brazilian steakhouse, French, Spanish, Italian, Japanese, Mexican. Select ships also feature al fresco dining on the waterfront and Ocean Boulevard, an oceanside promenade lined with bars and restaurants. Norwegian provides guests with truly authentic and fresh dining and bar experiences complemented by exceptional service. Almost everything you'll eat is prepared from scratch by highly experienced chefs. And they got whatever you're going to be in the mood for. You want a quick casual family meal? They've got that. You want a beautiful four-course feast? They've got that too. And you can sip something delicious at one of up to 23 unique bar and lounge options per ship. Visit and explore exciting destinations around the world and enjoy unique experiences on board. With no set dining and entertainment times and no formal dress codes, you have the flexibility to design your ideal vacation. Book your next adventure at ncl.com. Whether you're a family vacation traveler, a business tripper, or a long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. They've got over 7,000 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. And you will get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. I especially love those Cambria Hotels. They have locally inspired hotel bars with all kinds of specialty cocktails, downtown locations right in the center of all the action. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces. That way, if you're a business traveler, you'll be able to get all your work done. On-site restaurants, fantastic. And then at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles and great pools for the whole family and spacious rooms. I mean, if you have kids, you understand the importance of the pool. If you stay at a hotel with a pool, almost nothing else matters. Fortunately, all the Choice Hotels take care of all the other stuff too, but I mean, a pool is a great start. Whatever kind of vacation you're going on, whatever kind of travel you're doing, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travels come true. I continue to get a lot of flack for my PB&J technique, okay? Jelly on the top, jelly on the bottom, peanut butter in the middle. That's the way to go. And the first thing people say is, well, when you spread the jelly on both sides and then spread the peanut butter on top, you're going to tear the bread. And my answer to you is, use better bread. Like Hero Bread. You get that whole wheat Hero Bread. It's got some grain. It's got some heft. It's got some flavor. It's got some texture. And it will stand up to my excellent PB&J technique. Hero makes delicious breads that include no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, but plenty of protein and fiber. The soft, fluffy experience you love when enjoying a refreshing BLT, a savory breakfast burrito, or a mouthwatering cheeseburger, you can have all that with Hero Breads. And let me tell you, we are a big burrito-eating family in our house. Breakfast burritos happen multiple times a week, and these Hero Flour tortillas are perfect for it. Don't give up being a breadhead. Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co, that's hero.co, and use code SPORKFUL at checkout for that discount. That's code SPORKFUL at hero.co. I just got a very wonderful shipment of goodies from the folks at Reese's. And let me tell you something. These people remain the absolute worldwide leaders in bringing together chocolate and peanut butter. Of course, we know the peanut butter cups remain transcendent. But have you tried the Reese's Sticks? They're wafers with peanut butter in between each wafer, all coated in chocolate. I mean, the combination of sweet chocolate and salty peanut butter just brings people joy, and the folks at Reese's do it better than anyone. So shop Reese's Peanut Butter Cups now at a store near you, found wherever candy is sold. Welcome back to The Sporkful. I'm Dan Pashman. If you haven't already, you have to check out last week's show with Nadia Hussein. Since winning Great British Bake Off in 2015, she's gone from a stay-at-home mom to an international cooking star, writing best-selling cookbooks and hosting shows for Netflix and the BBC. She's also been open about her battles with anxiety and panic disorder, which were a big struggle for her during Bake Off.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? Nobody says, oh, well, you know, you're not great at the moment. Your mental health is suffering. Why don't we just stick you on the biggest baking show in the country, if not the entire world? Really, when you say it out loud, it's absurd. And it had a massive toll on my mental health. I'm not going to say that it was a walk in the park, that I just kind of breezed through it. I absolutely didn't. I had more panic attacks during Bake Off than I've ever had in my life.
We also talk about racism and sexism in the world of food media and how Nadia herself has changed over the last few years. That episode's up now. It's a great conversation. Get it wherever you got this one. Now back to comedian Nicole Byer. Nailed It is really an anti-cooking competition show. The competitors basically don't know what they're doing. Part of the joy of watching the show is seeing how badly they screw up. But it's not mean-spirited. It feels more like the contestants are all in on the joke, as Nicole, Jacques Torres, and a guest do the judging.
All right, let's taste it.
Oh my God, this is pretty dry.
No, really?
I'm so sorry. I was going to be nice. Oh, that's awful.
How much salt do you put in
there? You put only salt in that.
Really?
Salt. You put salt instead of sugar.
Sugar. Okay, three. Perfect. My friend, after doing that to us, you have to eat it.
This show, Nailed It, has like really struck a chord with people. I'm curious, why do you think, I mean, aside from clearly the fact that you are great in it and Jacques is great, but I feel like there's something about it that's bigger than that, that is connecting with people. What do you think that might be?
Well, I mean, at its core, it is me. I'm perfect and wonderful. I think it's like, it's a show about people failing, but you still get to win. And I think with social media, the way people present their lives now on like Facebook and Instagram or whatever, everything is perfect and everything is wonderful. And people don't really show, you know, unless they're like, I'm depressed and I'm sad. Like they're not really showcasing like the ups and downs of life. Do you know what I mean? Like nobody's, you know, photographing a okay looking burger, you know?
Right.
It's all like this decadent meal that I had or whatever. And I think Nailed It is just like normal people doing normal things. And you're like, oh, I literally see myself because I'm doing normal things and I'm trying to bake, you know, with my boyfriend or my kids or whatever.
And I feel like there's something almost sort of oppressive about most food media that it creates this completely impossible standard.
Yeah, everyone's fucking perfect. You know, you got this, I love Chop Junior, and there's always like a kid on there who's like, I'm just trying to make my dad proud. You're like, oh no, you're never going to. And yeah, I feel like it's like an unattainable thing when people are doing like, you know, reductions and like Chopped, they have to do stuff with shit that I've never heard of. You're like, what is a boysenberry?
When people on Nailed It are really, when they're going especially off the rails, do you ever feel bad for them?
No, it's very funny. And one of them will get money for being bad at what they're doing.
This cake is good, but a little bit dry, no buttercream. Unfortunately, you forget. It needs to be beautiful, but it needs to be eaten.
I think you baked the cake perfectly. I think it tastes great. But it would be a lot better if you had added the buttercream in it.
Okay. Kelly, I liked your cake. It made me happy. It was chocolatey. I liked it.
Thank you.
You know, it's all about learning. I do that for almost 40 years. I still learn things.
40? I thought you were 35. 30.
I love you even more.
How are you learning in utero? Jacques, you magical.
And I gather that you and Jacques Torres have really hit it off.
I love him. He's great. He's one of the sweetest men I've I've ever met. He like made me donuts one day. He invited me to his house. He pounded me with a bottle of wine. We tee-hee-heed and giggled.
And I understand that you have sculpted quite a lot of chocolate dicks for Jacques.
Yeah, he keeps them in his desk. A little dick graveyard. Jacques loves nasty jokes. I say a lot of nasty shit when we're filming, and he loves it. I remember like the first time I said something dirty, he was like, Nicole! There was one episode, I can't remember which one it is, but this woman snake maybe, I think it might be the snake one, I don't know. This woman was making something and it looked just like a dick, and then they left it in. Jacques goes, Nicole, what do you think that looks like? And I was like, you don't want me to say it.
But I read an interview with Jacques, who, of course, is a world-renowned baker and chocolate maker.
Yeah, I had no idea.
He complimented your chocolate dicks. He said, anatomically, she's very good. She makes them very exact. Nicole, what's the secret to making an anatomically correct chocolate dick?
Having a photographic memory, having a bunch of dick imprints in your brain and nothing else. So you can just roll them out.
All right. Well, I guess that does seem like a logical, it's just experience is what you're saying, like anything else in life.
Yeah.
You got to put in your 10,000 hours.
Yes.
Speaking of dick jokes.
Yeah.
One of the things I was curious to chat with you about is, you know, I feel like there's a commonality between comedy spaces and restaurant kitchens.
Yeah.
Very sort of male testosterone driven, abusive places to be for women.
Yeah.
So I was reading this article in the New York Times, and it was telling this story about this chef, Tracy Desjardins, who now is a big time chef. She's got a lot of restaurants. But early in her career, she was one of the very few women in a high end kitchen in France, which you can imagine, not an easy place to be for a woman. And a bunch of live frogs were brought into the kitchen, and a couple of male chefs were killing the frogs in an especially gross and inhumane way that I'm not going to recount. But they called her over and told her to do it too. And she could tell, you know, this was a test. And so she picked up a frog, and instead of killing it the way they were killing it, she just slammed it down on the table and killed it in what she thought was the most humane way possible. And the writer of this article in the Times, Kim Severson, she's a longtime food writer, and she said, you know, I first heard that story years ago, and when I first heard it, I just thought it was kind of like a good example of a woman's ingenuity in a tough situation in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
But now she sees it as an instance of workplace bullying and harassment.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had to do the comedy equivalent of banging a frog against a table?
No. I came up doing improv at UCB, and I started 10 years ago. Oh, I'm getting old. And I think I just like quickly established that I was a dominant person. And if some dude was gonna like call me a bitch or whatever in a scene, I will look at him, pause, like let the audience take in that this man just called me a bitch, and then hit him back with something funnier and better and smarter. So I guess that's what it, like, I guess maybe that's the comedy equivalent in improv, is like just being funnier, better, and smarter than men. But like anytime a man has like tried to force me into like a sexual thing in a scene, I'm not going to just do it to do it, but like I will make it funnier than anything he's ever done.
But I do wonder, like, is being super explicit about sex in your comedy sort of like its own kind of defense mechanism?
No. I've always been a pretty sexual person. I have a lot of testosterone, and I've always been like sexually explicit. And I think it was because growing up it was people were like, oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. So like maybe it started off as like shock value, but like now it's just so ingrained in me that I say a lot of things and never really think twice about it. Like someone the other day was like, your podcast is pretty explicit. And I was like, is it? I really don't think it is. But then again, I don't think anything I do is explicit. I think I'm just me. I don't know. I used to love peanut butter and bologna sandwiches, but the kids in class would make fun of me. And I can only think of three times in my life where I conceded to bullies. And one was, oh, wait, maybe two times. One was a bologna and peanut butter sandwich, and one was gymnastics. I quit gymnastics over this girl being a cunt. But then I was like, well, I guess I can't eat peanut butter and bologna sandwiches anymore. I got to eat them with something else. So then I discovered I like peanut butter on potato bread. So then I was like, but I also really like tomatoes. Why don't I throw a tomato in there? And then I would eat peanut butter and tomato sandwiches. And I knew it was weird in my heart of hearts. So I wouldn't eat them at school, but I would eat them at this lady's house. Her name was Miss Arletha. She had a pool and she would like babysit me when my mom was working. And she would make them for me. And she didn't judge me because she was an old lady and she already didn't give a fuck. And I learned a lot from her.
What else did you learn from her?
Not to give a fuck. Because sometimes I'd like wear my bathing suit and I'd be like, oh, I feel, I look fat in it. And she's like, you're a little girl. You look like a little girl. I was like, okay.
And do you ever eat peanut butter and tomato sandwiches today in the comfort of your own home in secrecy?
No. I think eating sandwiches at home is like weird.
Wait, what?
I've never been like, ooh, I think it's so weird to just like make a sandwich. I don't know why. I don't.
What do you eat at home?
Not sandwiches. I don't.
Do you know where you can trace this opinion to?
The old like, get in the kitchen and make me a sandwich. So maybe my brain took it as, I will never make a sandwich in my kitchen. And I'll never eat a sandwich. I'll never serve a sandwich to a man. Maybe that's where it came from.
If I send you a sandwich in the mail, will you eat it?
No. No, I'm not going to eat a sandwich sent to me through the mail. No. Because someone the other night said to me something that broke my brain in the moment. She was like, all letters are sent from the past into the future. And it broke me because it's true.
Right.
You write a letter and then you send it to the future because it's going to take a while to get to that person. So, yeah, I don't want your past sandwich.
That's the one and only Nicole Byer. Her show is Nailed It on Netflix. She's also the host of two great podcasts, Why Won't You Date Me? And Best Friends, the latter of which she hosts with fellow comic Sasheer Zamata. Next week here on the show, I talk with Dr. Jessica B. Harris, one of the country's leading scholars of the foodways of the African diaspora. Her seminal book, High on the Hog, was recently adapted into a series on Netflix. We talk about how her early travels to West Africa influenced her work and changed how she felt about herself. That's next week. This show was originally produced by Ann Sanny, Aviva de Kornfeld, and me. Rob McGinley Myers was our editor. The show is mixed by Dan DeZula. Our current Sporkful team includes Emma Morgenstern, Andres O'Hara, Tracy Samuelson, and Jared O'Connell. Music help from Black Label Music. The Sporkful is a production of Stitcher. Our executive producers are Peter Clowney and Daisy Rosario. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Steve Dahleen in Carver, Minnesota, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.